right, guys, thanks for downloading yet another episode of the PWCS Wrestling Podcast. I, of course, am your host, the co-creator and co-promoter of PWCS Wrestling, Greg Jovai, and we're here to talk to you this week about Stage 2 2015, a landmark event for many different reasons you'll hear over the next 2 weeks. But of course, you know how this works. You know, I got a little intro for you. And this week, man, I'm just going to kind of do this stream of consciousness thing, man. I got a lot of thoughts floating around in my head, and I don't really know the best way for them to come out. Usually I sit here and meticulate, and I do a bunch of takes until I get everything right. I get my words right. And I don't want to do that this week, man. I just kind of want to let it flow. I'm feeling something. I'm feeling something inside of me, you know. Talked a lot about how my mental state and things that are going on that in my personal life and the stress that I was under for a while in my personal life affected how I was promoting wrestling. And I want it to be clear, that doesn't affect my passion for professional wrestling. I have a huge, unadulterated amount of passion for promoting professional wrestling as an art form. And that's what I think makes PWCS different from anywhere else. Not that anybody else that's promoting wrestling, whether it's Dirtbag Joe's drawing 20 people, or it's Anarchy or Glory Pro or WWE, they all see it as an art form. But I have a very specific vision of what I want to do and the type of pro wrestling that I want to create. I want to create that pro wrestling that makes you feel something. I want to create that pro wrestling that makes you feel the passion that I feel inside of me for professional wrestling, whether it's through my performances on commentary or through my performances as a manager or through a writer and booker for PWCS Wrestling. I want to make you feel something. I want to make you feel happy, sad, angry, upset, whatever emotion. I want you to feel emotions. That's to me what art is. And pro wrestling is an art form. I think I'm going on this rant because I've been talking to a lot of new people lately. They've learned about this little double life that I live as a professional wrestler. And then they ask, like, what do you do? I only know what WWE is. How do you describe that? And I've kind of dumbed it down by saying it's full contact improv theater. And I think if you got to say it in one sentence, man, that's it. But pro wrestling is just so much more. It's like, how do you describe this crazy thing that you understand? Because if you're one of the 20, 30, 40 people listening to this right now, and I hope to grow to 50, 60, 70, 80, you know what I'm saying? Just like we did with PWCS with the crowds. I hope to get this podcast to grow. But if you're listening to this right now, you're a hardcore professional wrestling fan. If you give a crap about what I'm saying about pro wrestling, then you're a hardcore professional wrestling fan. If you care what Greg Jovai thinks about pro wrestling. So, you know, I know that I don't have to preach to you, but I think it's just fun to sit here and talk about this. Like, think to yourself as you're listening to me here, like, how do you describe pro wrestling to somebody? And I have a huge passion for pro wrestling as an art form, and I want it to be respected, and I want my work to be respected, and I want my company to be respected. I want my work to be spoken about in the same air as Jim Cornette, Bobby Heenan, Paul Heyman. I want my promotion to be spoken about in the same way that today, you know, Glory Pro, St. Louis Anarchy, people are speaking about that. And sometimes that passion, that desire, it can go one or two ways, and it's real violent, and I don't know what makes it go one way or another. Sometimes it fuels me. It makes me get up in the morning and want to do everything I can from the moment I wake up to the moment I go to bed to put out the best product possible. And there's other times where it makes me want to quit. That passion turns on me like a weapon. Instead of a fuel to fuel the flame, it turns on me like a weapon. And it's like, you know, you want to do your best. You want to be spoken about in that rarefied air, but you wake up that morning and you feel like it'll never happen. You feel like you'll never make it there. So why are you trying? Why does it matter if you don't put it off to the next day? Everybody cares about the next big thing anyway. They all care about the flash in the pan anyway. And you know why I'm saying this, man? Hell, I don't even know. But it just feels good. It feels good to emote. It feels good to talk about pro wrestling, to passion for pro wrestling. So if you're listening to this, tweet at me. I got a new Twitter handle, @HeelMoneyJovai, spelled just like it sounds. And just tweet at me about your passion for professional wrestling. What you think? I don't want pity party. I don't want people coming to me and going, oh, we care about you just as much as other promotions or we think you're just as good as anyone. That's not what this is about. What it's about is putting out there, getting that dialogue of what do you see pro wrestling? What do you want out of pro wrestling? What do you respect in pro wrestling? I want to hear that, and I want to chew it up, and I want to spit it back out at you as the best professional wrestling in the area. And it's all about kind of getting into this this new character that I think you're going to see here in the coming months at a couple of promotions, and it's going to pop up and really change the game of what I'm doing as a performer. And I'm really excited about it. And I think the kind of stream of consciousness thing, the things I'm thinking about here, the things I'm talking about here, man, that's it's all going to play into it. So I'm really excited. A little teaser for you. Speaking of teasers, at the end of this show, I'll come back. We'll announce a match for Stage 2 2018 coming up here in just a little bit under 2 weeks, man. Stage 2 2018 is going to be huge. Every single match on this card is a banger. It could be a main event. I can't wait to announce this one at the end of the show. For now, we're going to kick it over to Dan and Pass Greg as they talk about Stage 2 2015.
I'm the sound guy. Say hi.
Hi.
Yeah. Patrick's boys. This episode will have a distinct lack of dog noise.
Yeah.
Which will be great. So if we can just get a hotel every time we record the podcast.
Once we'll sound so much professional.
Have the fucking crack motel down the street and think we're fucking like banging each other for drugs.
You're gonna get sleepy. You're just gonna hear banging on the door on the damn walls and everything. So Stage 2 of 2015, our first one in a new show, new venue, I should say, the Downtown Dugout. Nice place. Looks pretty cool. I like the way the aesthetic looks in that area.
Yes, I like we covered on the last one, Stage 1 2015 was the demise of the Tri-City YMCA for us. And so we had to look and find a new venue. And luckily we had enough time. I don't know how long it was in between events. I didn't look up dates, but
it's usually close to about 2 months though. So we had
enough time to find a good place. And I remember I scouted a few different places. I went to the Mexican Honorary Hall in Granite City. I had one good meeting with the guy. And then I had a second meeting where Fitchett and I went back to measure the ceiling. And he was hoisted, the honorable Mexican that runs the Mexican Honorary Association.
Oh, okay.
He was not all that honorable off on that day. He was obliterated. And that didn't necessarily turn me off from it, but the ceiling height was an issue. And a few different things. It's like, I don't know if I'm going to deal with this guy. And I think there was a couple other places that we had looked into, but I ended up seeing a picture of somebody's like that I watched kids at the time. And then I've seen a picture of a parent who I was friends with on Facebook, picture of their kids working out at this place or something. And I saw that it had high ceilings. And yeah. I was like, man, I bet this place doesn't have a whole lot going on. So somehow got in contact with the owner. I guess not owner, it's like a board ran thing, the chairman of the board at the time.
School board kind of thing, I guess.
Yeah, kind of like the Y has a board or a school board or whatever. It's ran by a group of folks in a board.
Okay.
And the head guy was like one of the coaches. Got in contact with him. He was interested, so we went down to check the place out, and it looked like you said, it looks great.
Yeah.
Like that's definitely there are pros and cons of the place. Pros, it looked fantastic. They were willing to match a price that I was pretty happy with. And so, base party, it was enough to where we figured we would need to, it was fine to go with it. We were able to sell our own concessions there, which is something we don't get to do anymore.
Right.
So there were a lot of pros. There were also a lot of cons in the sense that they didn't have any chairs.
Yeah.
So every chair that you see on this particular one, so we rented a U-Haul van and drove it to the Tri-City YMCA, where I then stole every chair in the building, including deck chairs. We piled as many chairs as we could into a little box truck and drove it down the street to the Downtown Dugout.
Not too far away.
Unloaded them. This is all after we had transported the ring as well.
Oh, yeah.
Kennedy handled the transportation of the ring at the time, but it still was a motherfucker to coordinate. And then imagine getting that all there, getting that together, and then going, okay, let's go take this box truck down the street and load a bunch of fucking chairs and do all that. It was an extra step. It was awful. It was the first time I'd ever driven a box truck, and I was terrified. It was not fun at all. But on top of that, we also scouted the place out in – so I guess the last show would have been late March, leading into this one in May.
Right.
So I scouted the building in late March, early April, when air conditioning was not an issue. I just assumed, like all other buildings.
Nice soft spring weather.
It had air conditioning, which was a wrong assumption to make.
Very wrong.
So there was like the little corridor when you walked in had air conditioning. The rest of the building, you know, like where all of us would be, did not. And so that was a calculated error, like we like to say in the biz. Overall, though, I mean, it served its purpose. We only did, I guess, looking back, 3 events there.
Yeah, 3 shows.
Because we did this season, and then after that, we moved to the other place, which will be a fun topic when we get to that.
Oh, yeah.
But, I mean, overall, it served its purpose for us. It looked great. I mean, it was the highest ceiling we ever had, and it did what it needed to do for us. And it got us out of into a place and out of the Y, so couldn't hurt. And obviously, like, this one didn't suffer from the fact that it was kind of a jank little setup, because we had, I don't remember the actual numbers, but I know it was close to 170 for this event, because it was a box office draw. And so we were really, really happy with the event, the way it looked on camera. You know, nothing bad could really be said about it.
Yeah, it's really interesting when you say how much people were there, because you can't exactly tell by looking around the ring, because like they got that little awning behind where the hard cam is, and a lot of people are actually kind of hidden in the dark back there.
That was what I kind of liked about it, though, was it was the first venue that I had ran at to where it made sense for the hard camera to shoot towards the majority of the people.
Yeah.
That was always the problem with the Tri-City Y, was that we had to put the hard camera to where it was facing the wall where there was always 1 or 0 rows.
Right.
And so it always looked, the hard camera always made it look like there was nobody there, even when we drew really well.
Yeah, that's true.
As opposed to here, where the hard camera was on that, it was just a depth of people. Like it was, like you said, to kind of describe it, if you haven't seen the video, you're looking at the ring, behind the ring, you see it just sort of dissipates into black because there's a really long hallway where we probably could have extended 20 rows or so. At this night, we had to go probably 7 to 10 deep, and there were people standing behind that.
Lots of people standing, yeah.
Because of just people filing in as the night went on. A lot of Kennedy's family and stuff didn't get there until late. He had a lot of people show up for it. So I liked that visual image, that it was just like, as far as you could see depth perception-wise, there were people.
Yeah, right.
As opposed to, here's a stone wall with 12 people in front of it. Man, this place looks like shit, you know?
The theme of the show here tonight would be Casey Carrington's message of chaos, which is beginning to show around the league. Rained down chaos last time, pile driving Stephen Kennedy in the middle of the ring, setting the message, stealing the championship trophy. And that's really going to be kind of the focus of what you got going on here this event.
I think our best events, a thread runs throughout the night.
Uh-huh.
And with this one, you start to see, you know, he says that he's going to come in, he's going to dismantle this whole idea of teamwork, he's going to cause chaos, he starts to do that here. You start to see infighting amongst teams, you start to see just the chaos throughout the night. He runs in on matches, he's switching his roster at the last minute, even the referee's ability to keep track of all of the chaos is called into question by our illustrious play-by-play man, Drew Lozano Jr. But it does play into the night where there's just sort of shit happening all throughout the night, and KC is sort of sitting back going, ah, ha, 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 ha. Look at the work I've done.
That wonderful laugh he does. It'd be great if you just edit that laugh in right here, because it's so awesome.
I don't put that much work into
it. But we get started here with the first matchup of the evening. We got Mike Outlaw representing the Blacklist, taking on Brandon Espinosa, led out to the ring by Greg Jovai, of course, representing the Ego Busters. And this is actually Mike Outlaw's debut as a member of the Blacklist.
Debut with us, totally.
Yeah.
And so And I think we'd had plans to use him. I liked his work. I'd seen some stuff. But as we've discussed before, I always want to have like a plan to bring him in. Well, that plan got hotshotted because, as you noticed, Mikazi didn't wrestle on this event.
Yeah.
So I think looking back, what happened was he was afraid in the wake of that Alex Castle match that we talked about,
where he just got his head pounded in,
he was afraid that he had a head injury, that, and if he had another head injury, he was going to look, you know, into retiring, I believe.
Uh-huh.
And so, because he had started to feel woozy and stuff afterwards, now that it kind of is all coming back to me, and so he planned to sit this one out. He went and saw some doctors and found out that it was like an inner ear issue.
Okay.
So it was nothing related to the match or anything like that. It was just something that happened. Serious. Yeah, it wasn't. It didn't have anything to do with his brain or concussion. It was an inner ear problem.
Okay.
So, but it was throwing off his sense of balance and stuff. So he thought, "Oh f, I just got my head rocked and now I'm dizzy and things aren't coming." So he thought he had a head injury.
Yeah.
So he said, "I want to be off this show to be safe." And we put it out there that he was off because of a head injury, that his future was in question, and his replacement was Mike Outlaw. And so this originally was going to be Mikazi versus Brandon Espinoza, but it becomes Mike Outlaw versus SB. And I said watching it, I was like, SB is like the perfect guy for these matches. I always liked having him open or go out number two or come out of intermission because mm-hmm. he put on a really solid match. He didn't do too much and blow you away. But he also wasn't going to shit the bed. And, you know, his window was always really well. He knew what he needed to do if you put him in an open match. A lot of guys yeah. want to go out there and steal a show, which is what I want. I want everybody to want to have the best match on the card. But SB also understands that if you put him in the open, there's a certain type of match that you need to have. And he's a strong heel, so you can get over a new guy like Outlaw.
Right.
And so everything sort of comes together. Not a whole lot to talk about, but I did want to put over Espy's ability to come out and deliver a solid open match and get a guy over. And we've used him in that role a couple of times.
Yeah.
Outlaw over with the elbow drop. And as I call the back to Espy's last loss, I just fucking walk away from
him. Just fed up with the whole thing.
I, for some reason, do not tolerate losses specifically from Brandon Espinoza.
Specifically. The next match of the night here, we got Adam Rich taking on Tank Engine Tommy in a free agent showcase match.
So Adam Rich does a opening promo around, I guess at the time, there was a viral photo that went around about a large woman eating hot dogs at the Cardinals game.
Yeah,
a personal
yeah.
trainer body shamed her. And it went viral, and he kind of used that as his material. I don't know if people were over Adam Rich or if they were over the – I'm gonna err on the side of they were over the viral video at the time, like that had already came and gone, because it just didn't get a reaction. I think people were kind of warming up still too, because throughout the whole match, they're kind of – it just doesn't fall – it falls flat, and I don't think people stopped caring about Adam Rich just from the previous event, because they were super into him at the last one.
Oh, yeah.
And he's going to get monster heat at these next couple events as well. So I don't think it was necessarily that. It's kind of a weird outing, though, where people weren't like super hot for the promo and weren't really responding to the jeers or whatever from Adam Rich.
Yeah.
And maybe it was because his opponent was Tank Engine Tommy.
It could be Tank Engine Tommy. Which is a very interesting guy, Tank Engine Tommy. I mean, I think he came out there with pigtails coming out there. That's a pretty interesting choice.
I really like Tommy as a person.
As a person?
Which is why he was on this card.
Okay. Yeah.
Because I don't know what the fuck a Tank Engine Tommy is.
I really don't know either. Well, like, was he trying to go for the that kid show kind of thing?
The kid show?
Yeah, the kid show with the Fire Engine,
it was a play on Thomas the Tank Engine, but what that translates to is apparently a grown man
with
pigtails.
Is that really going to get over with an adult?
Spoiler alert, it does not.
No, it sure doesn't.
Spoiler alert, it does not. But it plays, he's a larger gentleman, he's got a belly and stuff, so it played into the... put big guys against him.
Yeah.
So it was a quick match. That was the thing is another person who understood his position on the card. Adam knew that I wasn't putting him out there to have 15-minute five-star classics. He knew that I was putting him out there against chubby people to beat him in 3 minutes and get this character over. And so he went out, he cut his promo, he beat Tank Engine Tommy in about 3 minutes flat, and it was what it needed to be. It wasn't incredible, but it wasn't the Jonah Turk match either. The Tank Engine, I think there was a time where we eventually, and I'm sure we'll kind of get to it-ish, but we probably won't spend a ton of time on it even when we get there, so right. I'll go ahead and just blow it now. But I didn't like this character at all. The moment that I saw it, I was like, this is fucking stupid.
Yeah.
And so we kind of let it run its course here, but eventually we were going to turn him heel, and he was going to be kind of this, like, deranged little hipster guy. He started wearing a scarf, and we thought that there was something there with that character.
Mm-hmm.
But then he stopped. He was always kind of part of the JoJo carload, and the JoJo carload stops coming up, and we sort of break that St. Louis to Texas tie, and it just broke every, you know, it kind of, we weren't going to bring up just him, you know, obviously, it was something where he was coming up anyway, so we wanted to find something for him to do. And I have a soft spot for guys that bust their ass and put in the work. So this is a guy who's driving up from Texas, probably isn't making enough to cover his trip.
Probably not, yeah.
Would come up, bust his ass, referee for us, would make sure JoJo gets there no matter what happened.
Helps out with
I think
the
he
ring,
drove which... through an ice storm to get there for the...
Stage one?
Not even stage one for the championship show. Oh. I remember there was a show where he was like, we probably should have canceled, but I had to, you know, drive through an ice storm to get here. And I was like, well, thank you for not fucking up our entire event, brother.
Yeah, yeah.
And
for not dying on the way to the championship show.
It's and so,
not good either.
You know, I always want to award somebody that's like that as opposed to just coming up and expecting a spot. And so if you come in and bust your ass, you're going to get a spot. You're going to get a chance to prove yourself. And this is a kind of an example, unfortunately, that you need to put your best foot forward and you need to understand that you only get one shot at making a first impression. And I think if he would have done a different character or had something else in mind, or maybe even because I asked the question, what the fuck is a Tank Engine Tommy? Not just to be an asshole, but I don't know what he was doing.
No, not at all.
I've seen other videos of him doing that character, and he'd come out with like a super soaker and a skateboard, and it was just like this fucking conglomerate of weird shit as opposed to telling us who this person is. And maybe I'm being too harsh because it's hard to do that in a 3 minute squash match, but. You know, when you know what the roles you're stepping into, that's going to be a big theme here in this episode, I think. You know the role you're stepping into, so maximize that role. Don't try to go outside of it and get over yourself.
Mm-hmm.
If I'm putting you out there to do a 3-minute squash match against Adam Rich, do what I want you to do to the best of your ability, and you're going to come back.
Yeah.
Don't try and get over this weird, druggy skateboard guy. In the process, that, you know?
I'm pretty sure he doesn't even entirely know what the character was. And
same thing shooting back to Jonah Turk. What the fuck was a Jonah Turk? He was the free spirit, and nothing about his character reflected that.
Yeah.
You know, and he took the time to do a promo, even though I think I told him not to. And it's stuff like that where it's like, guys, you don't have to make this huge impression. You just have to do what I asked you to do.
Yeah.
You know? And that's, I think, a common misconception with young guys. I won't shout him out because I like him and he might be back. But there was a guy in the Worst Royal Rumble that did the same thing. I asked him to be in the match, and I said, you'll get a look down the road. And what should have – he sort of made us hold off an entry because he wanted an extended amount of time to do something. And I let it fly, but at the same time, that stuck in the back of my mind of like, you would get over more with me if you just did what I fucking asked you to do than if you pushed to do this 2-minute spot.
Yeah.
All right. Well, I'll put out. Daniel doesn't know how to get going here. I put in the notes that this is the point where we're going to bury Drew Exano Jr.'s commentary. I feel like you should be the best at this. You were tearing it apart while we were watching it.
Unfortunately, I'm very particular on my commentary, I guess. And I don't know, man.
I should say you're as hard on yourself as you are on Drew.
Yes, yes, I am. If anybody actually is near me, I don't think I'm a good color commentator, and I only keep doing it because you tell me I'm doing a good job.
I would say the best thing, your best quality is your enthusiasm. I cannot tell that you are not recording it live.
Yes.
Watching this tape back, I could very much tell that Drew Exano Jr. is not there live.
Yeah, yeah, you really can. It just... The whole thing, it sounds kind of
It just sounds very subdued.
Yeah,
it's like his
girlfriend is sleeping in the next room and he doesn't want to wake her.
Yeah, or he's, you know, broadcasting this over a giant field of tulips and he doesn't want to disturb them. He wants all of them
shot at hella Iowa out of nowhere.
It's just incredibly weird.
But the other point, as you pointed out as we watched it, that I mean, I remember at the time thinking, like, wow, he's really good.
Uh-huh.
And when he was on his game, he was pretty good. But there's so many points where, again, understand your role. His role is to tell the story and not get himself over or not – you're shitting on the heels one thing.
Yeah, mostly it's not getting – it's getting everything over, not just completely throwing absolutely everything under the bus.
Exactly. And so it came to a point where – even the faces started to suffer. Like, it felt like he was starting to really throw everyone under the bus, which is ultimately why we shit on him constantly for his commentary and stopping.
Yeah.
But I remember at the time even thinking it was good. And now this is only three or so shows in for him, and we're already noticing like he's undermining every heel. There's one thing to be like, ah, man, I don't like that guy. He's mean.
Yeah.
There's another one to be like, for example, Adam Rich's entire character is that he's in shape, and he's like, talking about how he still got a little bit of extra fat on him and stuff. And it's like...
Yeah, saying that he only could do 4 push-ups?
Yeah, yeah. It's like, that's not...
It's like, I'm pretty sure Drizano's not doing any push-ups before he does commentary.
Exactly. And that's not doing anything to help matters. Because if he's not who he says that he is, then the entire character crumbles.
Uh-huh.
And so, again, know your role. Know what you're stepping in there to do.
Yeah, instead of tearing down necessarily what Adam Rich was doing in that portion, he should really kind of be more trying to stick up for the babyface in the situation.
Exactly, exactly. And he's fully capable. Like, the main event, he's on.
Yeah, yeah.
And
he definitely
hit
his
really
stride
good
later on. But
and maybe he's just getting comfortable because he's not there live. But, you know, it reared its ugly head enough to where we had to make a change and move on and find something else to do. That's it. I just wanted to get the shovels out a little bit before we can move on.
We'll get to whenever we end up leaving Drew Exano. Unfortunately, we'll still have a couple more DVDs where...
When we leave Drew Exano, I believe you mean when he quits the business because of my harsh ridicule.
Apparently, yes. That's what allegedly happened. We'll see what the DVD says. But anyway, after that quick squash match, we have Adam Raw representing Chaos Nation coming out, facing off against Jake Durden.
So KC comes out wearing the clothes that he wore to his real-life job of GNC that day. Spoiler alert. Just to bring some realism back to this whole kooky world, he showed up in that attire and then walked out at it for his promo. But he brings out Adam Raw as a part of his team, which Adam Raw is basically like a local legend to a lot of people. He was in a big mainstay in LWA and a big part of what built that. I mean, kind of to go back, if you are just coming in as like a St. Louis Anarchy fan that transitioned to us or however you sort of found St. Louis area wrestling, there was sort of one big company for a long time. It was Gateway Championship Wrestling. And then some guys came along and made LWA, and it slowly started a groundswell to where they were packing the house and it was a big party atmosphere. And Adam Raw was a huge part about that with that. And he helped train a lot of guys, and he's sort of always my only critique as somebody who wanted to use him more was that he was always in and out. So I remember when he came and said, "Hey, I want to come back," and was started doing Anarchy shows. It took us a while. I think he was back in Anarchy for a while before I integrated him in.
Uh-huh.
And he was asking about doing it, but I knew, I was like, man, I plan stuff quite far out in advance. I don't want to get you in, have you do one or two shows and then just peter out, because he would kind of go through these cycles where he'd get really into it,
yeah,
and be 100%. I'm all in on pro wrestling. And then, as with everybody else, new life would happen and it would take him away. And it would just seem so sudden. And I remember multiple times that sort of happening during Anarchy. So when this happened and the opportunity arose to use him, I thought he'd fit perfectly with the Chaos Nation people, because we sort of created this character for him where he was like, I don't even know what's going on here. I don't even know about this team thing. I want to beat somebody up. So point me in the direction of where you want me to go, and I'll beat some ass, and I'll leave.
Just one big, giant personal trainer just looking to exert some force.
And so we were excited to have him, but I wanted to make sure he was kind of, you know, all in at the time before we plugged him in. And so we plug him in this spot, and he has this big man brawl with Durden, and he looks strong throughout the match. I think that this was a really well done match. This goes to what you get with a guy like a veteran like him. He puts together this match where he looks strong throughout it. Durden gets a legit clean as a sheet pin over him, but he breaks out of Durden's spike. He looks great, and then we produced it to where he would attack Durden afterwards. So you look out of it, Durden stays strong,
yeah,
and Raw asserts himself as a threat. Even in a loss, Raw asserts that he's a big man that could do some fucking damage. And so, but this is, again, we kind of go back to that chaos thread throughout the night. This is sort of one of the small stitches in that thread of, here he comes out. You're expecting Alex Castle. Here comes Adam Raw. He comes in, fucks shit up. He even loses, but continues to grow stronger. And that would be a theme for Casey Carrington himself and his team, that you could beat him. You can win a match against him. But like a zombie, he's going to keep rising from the dead.
Yeah.
Which is ironic because Casey Carrington is fucking terrified of zombies.
What?
Casey Carrington is terrified of zombies. And if you were to say to him, but Joseph, zombies aren't real, he'd say, I'm afraid of real ones.
Real ones?
There's a story where one time at Dynamo, I think it was either Dynamo or Gateway. I'm not 100% sure that I was there. Maybe the vision was just told to me so perfectly that I was able to visualize it. But Stephen Kennedy orchestrated to where when Casey Carrington would come back to the locker room, everyone would, one of them would snap their fingers and everyone would go zombie and start going after Casey Carrington. And I believe they chased him out of the building.
So we're talking kind of like the voodoo kind of zombie.
Like the traditional zombie with the arms out, walk and everything. And they all chased Casey Carrington out of the building. And I can't imagine why he ended up being an asshole that wanted to pile drive everybody.
Zombies aren't real, but real zombies.
Real zombies.
He's afraid of. I mean, that's a valid
concern. Airtight logic.
Yeah, valid, you know, provided there were real zombies to be actually afraid of. It still seems pretty weird. But after the Adam Raw and Jake Durden match, we move on to another free agent showcase featuring Steve-O Reno versus Jeff Gant.
All right, so hey, we got out the shovels earlier. Let's break them out again, because this match, first of all, it was not as shitty as it was an okay match. Like, it was an objectively decent little match.
Uh-huh.
But for what it was supposed to be and what we, again, know your fucking role. What we asked for was, you know, 8 to 10 minutes of, and I believe Steve-O Reno was supposed to be a solid heel.
Okay.
And he didn't play up a heel. And so what happened was this sort of face-face match, which only works in the event of two, like, super over people where they get to pick.
Yeah, very well-respected faces.
Fucking Hogan Warrior.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Brett, another person that people like that was over. I don't know.
Yeah, not too relative.
I was going into a specific example, and I lost myself.
Yeah.
But you get what I'm saying. Yeah, I mean, Gant had two matches. This is Steve Areno's first singles match.
Uh-huh.
And so I think he even tried to play heel, but he just didn't commit all the way. I feel like, I mean, Steve Areno was supposed to be heel, but I feel like at one point, I mean, Drew even points out that Gant starts to go heel.
Yeah, Gant started getting a few boos, and started playing it a little bit.
So it was just like this wishy-washy match where they didn't commit one way or another.
Uh-huh.
And it was 12 minutes long, which is only, you know, probably two over what I had on the rundown. But I felt like I was going to fucking pass away before this match ended.
Yeah, it didn't feel long.
I thought it was like 20 minutes long.
Yeah,
when we watched it.
Oh yeah, we had to rewind the tapes, that way we could tell exactly how long that one was, because it felt like an eternity for some reason. I don't know what it was, but it just felt forever.
I'll tell you what it was, is that they didn't, that objectively from like an athletic standpoint and watching, you know, the selling was good, the moves were crisp, but wrestling is about telling a story, and they didn't tell a story. It wasn't, here's the bad guy, Steve Orino, coming in to knock down everybody's favorite underdog, Jeff Gant. It was, let's see who can get the most shit in. And so it turned into nobody knows who the good guy is or the bad guy is, and there's no story. It's just about who can do the most moves.
Yeah.
And so what is a fine match on paper feels like it takes fucking 30 minutes because it's not moving at a right pace and the story isn't progressing.
Yeah, and nobody has that much investment in the characters either.
Exactly.
For any of that to really turn around.
Exactly.
But after that respectable but somehow oddly long match, we have Danny Adams and Roscoe Eat Lisa facing off against the Viking War Party and JoJo Bravo. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this is like what? This is a six-man tag? Have you ever done a six-man tag match
we
before?
We had not done a six-man tag match. We have not done a six-man tag match since. No. Not for any particular reason.
No.
But I remember there was a couple times in the first season that Jason pitched a six-man tag. And I can't think of any specific examples, but I know that it had been brought up. And I think we both kind of shot it down, saying we didn't want to get that close to all four guys being in the ring at the same time.
Yeah, yeah.
Because otherwise, what's the point of the championship match? Like, that's the most special thing about the championship match, is that the only time all four guys on one side compete against the four guys on the other.
Yeah, the other thing is that then you're taking three guys out of what's usually only a four-man roster, and you usually have three matches pitting the guys against each other. So it's like you have one more person to have two matches somehow? Like, it doesn't make sense from the schedule kind of standpoint.
I think at this point we were still really wishy-washy with how many people could be on a team at a time. And I think maybe here we had, like, silently moved to – you could have – no. Yeah, I'm going to stop myself before I start bullshitting. I don't think we narrowed down any rules yet.
Yeah.
For who could be on our roster or how or anything like that. Because the first season, I just cycled through motherfuckers. However, we got a heel or an ego buster. There was no rhyme or reason for who was added or how or when.
I think you legitimately almost had about a dozen people on your team in the first season.
Yeah.
And there was only four shows.
Yeah. And so I think during this part, as we're sort of doing things like this, where, oh, all of a sudden there's five guys on the blacklist and the ego busters. Okay, whatever. That kind of thing is what we started to do. I started to talk with Pierre a lot about, he was like, you should nail down max rosters. And I sort of was talking to Jason about we needed to do a draft or free agent, you know, period or something. So all those ideas between the three of us sort of got melded together into where we eventually went with the six-man match, max roster.
Uh-huh.
And, you know, we did a draft to sort of flesh out everything with that.
Right, mix it up a little bit.
But at this point, we were still very much fluid with, I mean, we could have had fucking 20 guys on our roster and there weren't really rules against it, solid rules at least.
Right. Back to the matchup at hand with the Roscoe Eat Lisa and Danny Adams versus the Viking War Party and JoJo Bravo. It was quite an interesting one when it starts off. I mean, you got the Viking War Party just coming out and they're just throwing chairs. I think I mentioned that JoJo Bravo looked like a big kaiju just kicking them every once in a while.
The
traditional Viking War Party mayhem was quickly breaks out here in this matchup.
And JoJo kind of falling in line behind them. Like, I almost wish it would have been like they're just raising hell and JoJo was just like, yeah, like behind them, like very like just tipping over chairs or like just very gingerly like causing mayhem. But this was watching this back to sort of like, we have a ton of notes on this match. To sum it all up, this is the difference between a match going long and being like a root canal, or a match going long and you being excited about it.
Yeah.
We didn't go back in time this match because we all liked it.
Oh yeah.
And we liked it because it was a progressive story. And it got more exciting as you went around. There was maybe a small period in like kind of the second act of the match, if you will, that I was like, ooh, I wonder how long this is going. But for the most part, action kept up. It kept a nice pace. It had this crescendo of everybody, you know, there's a waterfall where everybody comes in and starts hitting moves on each other. And it's exciting.
There was actually the waterfall when mysteriously everybody started diving over the ropes. I think all six of them went in succession, and then a few went back for doubles.
You get the big man Alex Rudolph dive.
Yeah.
Mikey McFinnigan does the big dive and lands on his face. We should point out this was the debuts for Zach Sawyer and Mikey McFinnigan after I'm pretty sure we tried to get Zach Sawyer on every single event leading up to this, I feel like.
Oh, yeah?
There was plans for him well into season one, and things fell through every time.
Hmm.
I think he was originally supposed to be a blacklist guy.
Okay.
Or, no, he was supposed to be a resurgence guy. Because we sort of
also makes sense.
We envisioned the resurgence as like the cool kids eventually. It was once you started, especially once you got Fitchett and Vega on there, it was sort of like these, they're like the cool kids. They're the guys that are having fun and I, you know, that's the best explanation I can. If the blacklist the are here, if the blacklist are the underdogs, then they're the cool kids. Yeah. You know. But the nice cool kids, I guess. I don't know.
Not the assholes.
I cornered the market on the assholes.
That's right.
But anyway, we found this opportunity. We finally got a date that Roscoe Eat Lisa could do, so we wanted to do it. And I'm working this angle where it's sort of a new look Ego Busters, where instead of relying on the seasoned talent, I'm trying to bring along these new guys. So we thought this fell in line with that as well, where I'm trying to bring Roscoe Eat Lisa on into the Ego Buster way, the way Danny Adams is coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And so they kind of are trying to gel as a team throughout it. Eventually, again, in the heat of the match, they pick that up and they all kind of gel as a team and they're cheating and they're doing things my way. And it's like, aha, yes, they're getting it. And then into the match comes along a whole bunch of craziness. One of them, I think it's it wasn't Danny. I want to say it's Zach gets just fucking murdered with that crazy powerbomb double stomp combo for the finish. And then afterwards, we assert that Roscoe Eat Lisa are maybe not as heel as I would like them to be as the Ego Busters, as Danny Adams kind of comes in and says, like, hey, you're fucking up my spot here. I'm supposed to be the man, and you guys lost.
Right. Yeah.
And they bump him and send him along his way. So it gets what the job done that it needs to get done. I think we were setting up to have Roscoe Eat Lisa continue to be on my team at the next event,
mm-hmm.
with the idea that, you know, so they're kind of face-ish here, and we knew that I was going to be a de facto face going around next time because we knew that this was going to be the point where we had to have a heel team face a heel team at stage three,
right.
And shit was going to get weird. And so we needed to set me up as one of those two teams had to be more likable than the other one, and we didn't want to make anyone have a stitch of sympathy for Casey Carrington. He was supposed to be the biggest of the baddest of the bad.
Right.
So logically, it went to me that I had to kind of try to turn things around. So we knew that was going to happen. So we figured Roscoe Eat Lisa was getting over an anarchy as faces. So they come in here. They're a part of my team. We established that they're cool folks. You guys should like them. But they're with Joe Vi, so maybe boom tonight. And we sort of set up down the road that they're not Danny Adams. They're not one of those folks. And so we sort of put them on the back burner for stage three. But it was a really fun little match. Like I said, I know they went well over time.
Yeah.
And I remember at intermission, we looked and we were like, man, we got to figure out where we can shave some fucking minutes from the show because it's going way long. And we were not known for that. Not to pat myself on the back, fucking Barry Horowitz style, but I was very good at pacing the shows. It was something that I got complimented on by guys continuously. People being like, man, we love how these shows just, they're paced so well, they don't have a down point, and you get people in and out in an hour and a half, 2 hours, like a good movie, and they're not there for 3 or 4 hours. And this one, we were like, uh-oh. Yeah. And I think a big portion of that was a lot of this card was supposed to be different. This is the show that Jason referenced last time out, where JoJo told us when he got there, hey, I have to work tomorrow at whatever time, so I need to leave by intermission.
Right.
And it was like, well, great, because we had planned for everybody in the carload to be on the back half of the show, and now we need to move all of you guys to the front half of the show. So it really kind of fucked up our timings and everything.
Yeah.
And it wasn't like at the time we had a big dry erase board or anything. You know, you're at this downtown dugout where we are also – this is another thing I probably should have hit on when we were talking about the building. I was used to the comforts of that being my work. It was like having it at my house.
Yeah,
I was familiar with that place like the back of my hand. this downtown dugout place. I mean, if we forgot pins, I couldn't just go, oh, I'm just going to go to my office and get some fucking pins. Like,
right, yeah.
So here it was very like, oh man, what do we have? We got to fix this. We got to fix that. There was all kinds of things going on to where when we shuffled the card around, we probably lost some timings and lost track. But I will own all these guys going over time because that should have been something I was tracking at the time.
Uh-huh.
But regardless, this is one of three matches that goes drastically over time. But at least they tell a good story and it's exciting and you don't feel like you're getting a fucking root canal.
Guys, thanks for downloading the PWCS Wrestling Podcast. I said I'd hit you with a match now, man. Why don't we hit you with a couple of them? Huge women's match to announce as the Blacklist Angelus Lane goes one-on-one with the Resurgence's Savannah Stone. Another huge match to round out that Resurgence versus Blacklist series. It's the Bone Collector, Dominic Guarini, going one-on-one with Mike Outlaw. You, of course, add that to the other match in the series. Paco going one-on-one with Matt Kenway, defending his Gateway Heritage Championship. And, guys, we have a huge night of action lined up. Marty Bell's going to be there taking on Rey and Victoria in a free agent match. The huge main event, last man standing 2. Danny Adams settling the score with Gary J. Huge special attraction matchup as Maverick Mantell is going to represent my Ego Busters, a long-awaited event for me as he goes one-on-one with the Mile High Magnum Dak Draper. He will be representing the Submission Squad one night only. Guys, run, don't walk to www.pwcswrestling.com for tickets right now. We're going to have a couple left over of front row tickets as I put this out, but get those quick. They're going to go quick. And get those second row and general admissions. Save money off the door. Don't waste money by paying the $15 door price. Get your tickets tonight, www.pwcswrestling.com. This is going to be one of the hottest cards we've ever put on, and I want each and every one of you out there to see it. Saturday night, June 16th. Make sure you're there, www.pwcswrestling.com. And, of course, thanks for listening to that intro, man. I know it was a little goofy, a little out there, but just bear with me while I experiment a little bit, because as much as I'm getting ready for stage 2, man, I'm also getting ready for Circus Maximus. I'm really excited. I'm really excited to show up at Circus Maximus because, you know, everything I'm talking about in the intro, man, it's all truth. It's all real. It's all real. I've got these feelings inside of me, and I want them to get out. And the only way I'm going to get them out is with what I'm holding right now, a live microphone. So if you don't think old Greg Jovi is going to roll up into Circus Maximus and get a live microphone, man, you got another thing coming. Because, I want to be the best me. I want to be the dopest me that I could possibly be. And that's what I'm going to do. And the only way to do that is unleash the truth. I'm going to unleash the truth on you all that night. And I don't think anybody's ready to hear it. I don't think St. Louis Anarchy's ready to hear it. I don't think the fans are ready to hear it. But, man, I'm going to get a hold of a live microphone. And that night, I'm going to unleash the truth. They call it Friday the 13th, right? It's on Friday the 13th. That's supposed to be – that's a massacre. That's bloodshed. And that's exactly what I'm going to cause with my voice, with my truth. I'm going to walk right in there, baby. Drew Gold died for the sins of a new man to transcend and come forth. And that's exactly what's going to happen. You're going to see it right there Friday night, July 13th. I hope you're all there. Just like I hope you're all at stage 2, www.pwcswrestling.com. Thanks so much for listening, guys. I'll see you next week.
The podcast you just heard was recorded with Anchor. If you want to make your own, download the Android or iOS app completely free from anchor.fm/podcast. That's anchor.fm/podcast.